Yesterday, as he promised, Sayadawji spoke about Dhamma Oja, Dhamma nutriment, and how it slowly goes into the mind. Dhamma Oja is made up of two words, Dhamma and Oja, so we can say Dhamma Oja or Dhamma nutriment. Dhamma means something which bears those who practice according to the Dhamma. It means that which keeps us from falling down. It lifts us up. The Dhamma bears the Dhamma bearer. The Dhamma bears and lifts up the person who practices according to the Dhamma. It guards, it makes our lives better. So if people happen to be of a low, have some lack or be of a low standard, if they practice systematically according to the Dhamma, their lives will become upgraded, uplifted, improved. So those who want a better life come here with the faith in the practice. They believe that if they try, they can better their lives. So if we believe that the Dhamma can lift us up like this, improve our lives, we'll have the desire to practice. So we, if the Dhamma nutriment, Dhammoja, enters our mind, it will make the mind better, just the way the nourishing food will make our body more healthy. It will bring about new physicality that is strong. In the same way, the nourishment of the Dhamma will better the mind. And if one makes effort in the practice, in just a few days, one will see a distinct difference. One will see special things. So with that, that is the, how should I say it? So that is what Sayadawji has said about the Dhamma, and people who, when we see special things occur in our practice, the Dhamma pulls us along. It pulls us to practice more. On our side, we need to cherish this practice. We need to trust, have the desire to get the benefits, and make effort in a careful and respectful way. So in the texts, the meaning of the Dhamma, the root meaning of the Dhamma, is very satisfying to know. And it's said in the text, Yatanu Setang Patipajamanang Patipajamane, sorry. Yatanu setang patipajamane situsu chatusu apayesu vata dukesu cha apatamane katwa dari titi dhammo. So that expresses how the meaning of the word Dhamma comes about. Dhamma is that which protects us, guards us, and makes us secure. It lifts up our life as though it's raising it up. Like when we pull something up if we pull something up, steadily raising it, this is how the Dhamma raises us up so that we don't fall down into the four levels of lower rebirth of Apaya. If one goes up to a level where it's stable. If we keep on raising it, it'll eventually reach a level at which it's stable. So if we, in our practice, if we practice the Dhamma and become a sotapanna, a stream enterer, at that point we will not go to the lower realms of Apaya. These realms are free of they're devoid of the cause of happiness. So and we will not go to these realms if we reach sotapannahood. And if we are in our future lives, we will have at most 7 more lifetimes. So we will become free, completely free, of the suffering of rebirth in Upaya. And the time that we continue to suffer in samsara is shortened. So this is the meaning of the Pali that was just recited. If we continue to practice, having reached sotapannahood, going on to reach the second stage of sakadagami, or the third stage of anagami, and we continue and realize arahantship, there will be no more lifetimes for us once this lifetime is finished. If we aren't able to go that far in this lifetime, still, any future lifetimes that we have will be good. So one who wants to better their life, one who wants to have a high standard of life, should follow the path of the Dhamma. And the Buddha instructed us, first of all, to avoid doing that which isn't good to do. He instructed us in the training of sila. And further, we need to make our mind clean. We need to remove the obsessive kilesas, the pariyotana kilesas. Without the control of mindfulness, then there will be the tendency for thoughts of greed, thoughts of anger to arise, and we might want to even kill or harm others because of anger in the mind. Thoughts of greed can arise, wanting to steal, wanting to commit adultery or commit rape or incest, wanting to lie also for our own benefit. And there will be not knowing what is good to do and what is bad to do, not knowing what is really beneficial and what is not. And because of this, we would do things that are unbeneficial for us and avoid doing things that are good. This is what happens without the control of sati. So in order for this type of mind not to arise, the greedy, deluded, or angry mind not to arise, we have to control the mind. And what we need for this is the samadhi group, samadhi kanda. This is the training the Buddha taught. And from there, we need to develop vipassana knowledge. Having developed samadhi, when we develop knowledge stage by stage, then when we are mindful, the kilesas, the latent kilesas, anusya kilesas, will be eliminated. And when the vipassana knowledge is complete, when it's reached its maturity, then we will realize the noble path, Arya path, which destroys, each path destroys certain kilesas so that they're permanently removed. If we at least reach the stage of sotapanna, or the first stage of enlightenment, any old past deeds that we might have done that would lead us to rebirth in the lower realms will no longer take effect. We won't be reborn in the lower realms. And in this way, our life becomes assured. We have a guarantee for our life. So this is how the Dhamma raises up the one who learns the method of the Dhamma, and practices according to it. If one doesn't know the method, the correct method, or knows it but does not put it into practice, then this Dhamma cannot do anything at all. Okay, when we say that the Dhamma raises up one who practices accordingly, who practice systematically, then what happens? Dhammoja is what develops. Oja, which we called nutriment, something nourishing, it means capability. It means something or keen ability. And this oja, the capability that it has is that it can dispel what is bad. It can dispel akusala. It can dispel that which brings bad results. And it can also bring about good results. It can help us to develop kusala. So dhammoja, the nutriment of the Dhamma, is that it has that ability to dispel akusala and help develop kusala. And it's something that makes us satisfied with our life. So for this to happen, Sayadawji said yesterday, that first of all, we have to avoid misdeeds of body and speech. We have to avoid actions and speech which are not good. And when we do, when we have a basis of clean physical and verbal behavior, of sila, then we have the basis for developing dhammoja, the nutriment of the Dhamma. And this basis is essential. So having this, we need to keep our minds from wanting to harm others. So we have to go further once we have the basis of sila. So when we develop this control of the mind becomes clean. And there's no, our sila is pure. And on top of that, there's no desire at all to transgress in our minds, not even in our minds. So the potential for misdeeds is very far at this point. And from that point on, these Dhamma nutriments, Dhamma nutrients, Dhammoja, one after another, enter one's mind, develop in one's mind. Yogis who are practicing can see this very clearly. So today, Sayadawji will describe or speak about how on top of the sila that we all are keeping, he will talk about the method for keeping the desire to commit misdeeds from occurring in the mind. In one who lets defilements occur in their mind, there's ragegi, the fire of raga, the fire of lust, the fire of anger, or dosegi, and there's the fire of delusion, mohegi. So these fires are burning in us. Fire is hot, and it burns whatever is in its path that is burnable. It turns things to ash and makes them useless. This is what the Buddha said. So, which is better, to repair things after a fire has burned them, or to prepare in advance and prevent the fire from breaking out? It's better to prepare before the fire comes. And Sayadawji said that we can, there's a saying that we can win by being prepared, but we could also say the Boy Scout motto is to be prepared. So this is what we should do. And if we're prepared, we can prevent fire from breaking out, this mental fire. And if it breaks out, we can put it, we can put the fire out immediately. People of the world are mostly afraid of external fires, but not of the internal fires. So they have no means, most people, for fighting the internal fires. They just prepare for external fires. So people keep fire extinguishers in their homes or workplace, and these are good for putting out an ordinary fire. If that doesn't work, then one can use the fire escape to run away, and then one can call the fire department. And then only when one calls the fire department can the fire be put out. It's very important for all of us to become firefighters with regard to the internal fires. By studying the method that Seiraoji is teaching, the Buddha's method, we can become firefighters ourselves, and we can prevent fire from breaking out. And if it does arise, we can put it out immediately. So today, Seiraoji would like to discuss this, how internal firefighting in conjunction with the practice. In beings, transgression occurs because one can't overcome the mind. That's the first cause for transgression to occur. So because one can't control the things which arise in one's mind, it goes from being mental to actual speech and action. One can't control one. Because one can't control one's mind, one also can't control one's speech or one's actions. So if there's no way to prevent, if there's no way to prevent us from, if we have no way to prevent kilesas from arising, then lobha will occur, greed will occur in the mind. And when it becomes strong, we will want to steal, we want to commit sexual misconduct, we want to lie for our own good, and we will act upon these thoughts or desires. And when anger arises, dosa, in the mind, if it becomes strong, it will turn to hatred and will want to kill. Or, because of envy or jealousy, we'll want to harm others, and for our own benefit, to harm others, we'll want to lie. So not understanding the benefits, not understanding that moral behavior is good for us, beings do things that are unsuitable and unbeneficial, and thus one destroys one's own benefit, and at the same time one harms others. So to prevent unwholesomeness to get to the stage of being transgression, to prevent it from being expressed in speech and action, we have sila, moral behavior. But if one can control one's mind so that greed, hatred, and delusion, lobha, dosa, and moha, do not become strong, then there will be no transgression at all. No transgression won't occur. So in order to control one's mind, one has to fill one's mind with mental energy. How we do it is by noting every arising object, by always applying this rule. Noting every rising, falling, every sitting, every seeing, every hearing, tasting, touching, smelling, every bending, every stretching, standing, sitting, watching, opening the eyes, closing the eyes, blinking the eyes, and so on. But at the start, we have to begin with observing something easy. So the method is to note at every arising, always apply this rule. So arising, if we just take the words every arising, at every arising, what arises can be elaborated. For example, we can say, note at every seeing, note at every hearing. So every means each time it happens. So note at every seeing, note at every hearing, every smelling, tasting, touching. What is there when seeing occurs? There's the eye, and there's color and shape. There's something visible. And these are physical, these are rupa. They don't know anything. And then there's knowing the seeing, seeing consciousness. And there's contact and feeling due to the seeing. Seeing consciousness, the knowing of the sight, the contact and feeling are all mental. So in the moment of seeing, there's the seeing, there's the eye, and there's the visible object. And then there's seeing consciousness, contact, and feeling. The eye and the visible object are physical. The other three are mental. So there's just these two types of things in the moment of seeing. There's the mental and the physical, nama and rupa. There's nothing extra, nothing besides this. To know these components at the moment of seeing, we have to observe them, and we make the mental label of seeing, every time seeing occurs. In the moment of hearing, to note at every hearing. So in hearing, there's the ear, and there's sound waves. These two are rupa, or physical, matter. And then there's knowing the sound, hearing consciousness. And there's contact and feeling. These are nama, mental. So in order to, these are the things that are really there at the moment of hearing. And to know the nama and rupa, the physical and mental things that happen at the moment hearing arises, we have to observe it as hearing. In smelling, too, what happens is there's the nose and there's a smell that comes to the nose on the air. It's carried by the air. And that, for example, that smell may be something foul or poisonous. So these, the smell and the nose are both physical. And then there's the knowing of the smell, smelling consciousness, contact and feeling, the feeling good or bad. So there's then with taste, there's the tongue and the tasteable object. And these things are physical. And there's taste consciousness, or knowing of the taste. And then there's the taste, the contact between the tasteable object and the mind. This is what is meant by contact, the contact between the sense organ and the object. And then there's a feeling. It's either good to taste, pleasant, or bad to taste, unpleasant. So this taste consciousness, contact and feeling, These are all evident in the mind. When touch occurs, the body receives touch, and the tangible object, maybe something stiff or soft or hard, coarse, the tangible object comes and strikes the body base. And because of that, we know the touch, there's the touch consciousness, and there's the contact, the meeting of the object, the tangible object and the mind, the contact between the object and the mind, and then there's a feeling, good or bad, pleasant or unpleasant. And when we're in the cold, if we're cold, then we feel unpleasant if we become too cold. But if the weather is cold and we're warmly dressed, then we feel warm and pleasant. So these are two examples of how touch can be pleasant or unpleasant. And then mental objects. Mental objects are received at the heart base, which is called in Pali, Hadiyavuttu. This is physical. In the West, we think that thought or mental objects are perceived by the brain. But in the Buddhist scriptures, they are received at the heart base. And when the mental object, such as thinking, strikes the heart base, then there's knowing of the thinking. And this is mental. So this, too, is a comprised, made up of both physical and mental occurring. So to know the physical and mental phenomena that occurs in every instance, one has to practice according to the method of Satipatthana, to always apply the rule to note every arising object. The Buddha used the word dhatu. Dhatu means element, something which has its own nature, or which behaves according to its own nature. And we can use the word element for this too. For example, the eye, it has the capacity to receive visible objects. That's its nature, to receive the visible object. And this is undeniable, this is evident. When a visible object strikes the eye, there's seeing, and there's the contact, the meeting of the mind and the visible object, and then there's a feeling, pleasant, unpleasant, neutral. So these things are undeniable, they really exist. And in everyday language, we might use the words receiver, striker, and spark, or base, striker, and spark, or the base element, receiver element, striker element, and spark element. So the base, or receiver, are the eyes, ears, nose, and so on, the six senses that we have. The striker are the objects which come and strike the organ, sense organ. Because, for example, in seeing, because the visible object strikes the eye, light strikes the eye, we call it the striker element. And when the object strikes the receiver, then there's a spark, ignition, and there's what arises is consciousness, knowing the sight. Knowing arises at that moment, mentality. So there are these three elements, the receiver, the striker, and the spark. An analogy for these is a matchbox and a match. On the matchbox or matchbox or matchbook, there's an area where you can strike the match. And the match head also has material at the end that it can be ignited. So when you strike the head of the match on the side of the matchbox or on the front of the folder of matches, matchbook, then there will be a spark. So this is similar to what happens when we see something, when there's seeing, hearing, smelling, and so on. If the striker, for example, the match head, if it doesn't actually get to the box, then there won't be any spark. If the striker has not yet reached the sense base. Only when the object, the striker, and the receiver, the sense base, come into contact is there the spark of knowing. So tomorrow, Seyadoji will describe how to observe the sense phenomena as they happen with the practice of satipatthana. How, if we do not do this, when something that is attractive to us, when there's some sense experience, an object that is attractive, then greed, lobha, will arise. On the other hand, if there's something that is unattractive or disgusting to us, dosa will arise. And how, with the practice, lobha and dosa do not occur with regard to sense objects. How the clean mind is started and how it grows. How to apply ardent effort and accurate aiming in the practice. Seyadoji will discuss this for tomorrow. That's all for today.